Mr. President, I am grateful beyond measure for the confidence you have placed in me, and I will strive with all that I have to live up to your expectations in making this appointment. I appreciate, too, the special caring of Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan, the more so because I do not actually know the senator. I was born and brought up in New York, the state Senator Moynihan represents, and he was the very first person to call with good wishes when President Carter nominated me in 1980 to serve on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit. Senator Moynihan has offered the same encouragement on this occasion. May I introduce at this happy moment three people very special to me. My husband, Martin D. Ginsburg, my son-in-law, George T. Sparrow, Jr., and my son, James Stephen Ginsburg.
Please stand up.
The announcement the President just made is significant, I believe, because it contributes to the end of the days when women, at least half the talent pool in our society, appear in high places only as one-at-a-time performers. Recall that when President Carter took office in 1976, no woman ever served on the Supreme Court, and only one woman, Shirley Hufstetler of California, then served at the next federal court level, the United States Courts of Appeals. Today, Justice Sandra Day O'Connor graces the Supreme Court bench, and close to 25 women serve at the Federal Court of Appeals level, two as chief judges. I am confident that more will soon join them. That seems to me inevitable given the change in law school enrollment. My law school class in the late 1950s numbered over 500. That class included less than 10 women. As the president said, not a law firm in the entire city of New York bid for my employment as a lawyer when I earned my degree. Today, few law schools have female enrollment under 40%, and several have reached or passed the 50% mark. And thanks to Title VII, no entry doors are barred. My daughter Jane reminded me a few hours ago in a good luck call from Australia of a sign of the change we have had the good fortune to experience. In her high school yearbook, on her graduation in 1973, the listing for Jane Ginsburg under ambition was to see her mother appointed to the Supreme Court. The next line read, if necessary, Jane will appoint her. Jane is so pleased, Mr. President, that you did it instead. And her brother James is too. I expect to be asked in some detail about my views of the work of a good judge on a high court bench this afternoon is not the moment for extended remarks on that subject, but I might state a few prime guides. Chief Justice Rehnquist offered one I keep in the front of my mind. A judge is bound to decide each case fairly in accord with the relevant facts and the applicable law, even when the decision is not, as he put it, what the home crowd wants. Next, I know no better summary than the one Justice O'Connor recently provided, drawn from a paper by New York University Law School professor Bert Newborn. The remarks concern the enduring influence of Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes. They read, when a modern constitutional judge is confronted with a hard case, Holmes is at her side with three gentle reminders. First, intellectual honesty about the available policy choices. Second, disciplined self-restraint in respecting the majority's policy choice. And third, principled commitment to defense of individual autonomy, even in the face of majority action. To that, I can only say, amen. I am indebted to so many for this extraordinary chance and challenge. To a revived women's movement in the 1970s, that opened doors for people like me. To the civil rights movement of the 1960s, from which the women's movement drew inspiration. To my teaching colleagues at Rutgers and Columbia, and for 13 years, my DC Circuit colleagues, who shaped and heightened my appreciation of the value of collegiality. Most closely, I have been aided by my life's partner, Martin D. Ginsburg, who has been, since our teenage years, my best friend and biggest booster. By my mother-in-law, Evelyn Ginsburg, the most supportive parent a person could have. And by a daughter and son with the taste to appreciate that daddy cooks ever so much better than mommy and so phased me out of the kitchen at a relatively early age. Finally, I know Hillary Rodham Clinton has encouraged and supported the president's decision to utilize the skills and talents of all the people of the United States. I did not, until today, know Mrs. Clinton, but I hasten to add that I am not the first member of my family to stand close to her. There is another I love dearly, to whom the First Lady is already an old friend. My wonderful granddaughter, Clara, witnessed this super unposed photograph taken last October when Mrs. Clinton visited the nursery school in New York and led the little ones in the toothbrush song. The small person right in front is Clara. I have a last thank you. It is to my mother, Celia Amster Bader, the bravest and strongest person I have known, who was taken from me much too soon. I pray that I may be all that she would have been had she lived in an age when women could aspire and achieve, and daughters are cherished as much as sons. I look forward to stimulating weeks this summer, and if I am confirmed, to working at a neighboring court to the best of my ability for the advancement of the law in the service of society. Thank you. Great.